Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during our Q&A session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note today's call is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the program over to Stuart Anderson. Please go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Stuart Anderson, Executive Director of the National Foundation for American Policy, a nonpartisan public policy research organization started in 2003, focusing primarily on trade and immigration. The report we're releasing today on the contribution of immigrants to cancer research in America can be found on our website at www.nfap.com. Well, I'd like to thank the Ewing Marion Coffman Foundation for their support for this project. I decided to conduct the research because no one had ever examined the role of immigrants in cancer research, and since we have seen significant improvement in cancer survival rates in the past 20 years, I wanted to see if immigrants have been playing an important role in that improvement, particularly since that affects the lives of so many Americans. I examined the biographies of approximately 1,500 cancer researchers at the top seven cancer institutes in the country, ranked by grants received from the National Cancer Institute. What I found was remarkable. Overall, 42% of the researchers at the nation's top seven cancer institutes are immigrants. At the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, 62% of the cancer researchers are immigrants. At Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, 56% of the researchers are immigrants. And the contributions can also be seen at other top cancer research facilities. At Fox Chase Cancer Center in Philadelphia, 44% of the cancer researchers are immigrants, and approximately one-third of the cancer researchers are immigrants at the other facilities examined, including Johns Hopkins, Dana-Farber, UC San Francisco, and the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle. The researchers at the top seven cancer centers come from 56 different countries. Researchers from China account for 21% of the foreign-born cancer researchers at the seven centers and 8% of all cancer researchers at the seven centers. India was the country of origin for 10%, followed by Germany, Canada, and the UK at about 7%. I did some historical research as well and found four immigrant cancer researchers have won the Nobel Prize. 11 immigrants have served as president of the American Association for Cancer Researchers. The first head of the National Cancer Institute was an immigrant, and today immigrants lead cancer centers or key departments around the country. There are also many outstanding individuals profiled in the study, including Dr. Alfredo Quiñones-Hinojosa, who we hope to hear from shortly. Another individual is Dr. Won Ki-hong, a native of South Korea, who is one of the founders of chemo prevention and leader of the MD Anderson Cancer Center's Division of Cancer Medicine. His research and clinical work on premalignant lesions of the larynx has enabled thousands of patients in the United States to avoid potentially damaging surgery and maintain the ability to speak and swallow. I found that cancer researchers experience many of the same problems faced by other employment-based immigrants. Previous research we've done shows wait times range from 6 years to even a decade or more for many highly skilled immigrants, particularly those from India and China due to the per-country limit. According to the Cancer Institute, many of the individuals typically work in H-1B status at some point in their career. As I'm sure any oncologist could tell you, it's important to look beyond just the doctors and the nurses at a hospital because there are many other tasks being done, particularly when it comes to cancer researchers. According to the Institute, there's much important work being done by foreign nationals on H-1Bs in areas such as research technicians, information technology specialists, and lab technologists. Now, if one would poll Americans on which immigrants they would most like to see admitted to the country, it's likely cancer researchers would be at the top of the list. Surprisingly, when the House passed a bill last year to give more green cards for skilled immigrants, it actually ended up excluding the fields that include cancer researchers, excluding degrees in medicine, chemistry, and biology. So cancer researchers would not have been able to take advantage of the additional green cards. The bill didn't pass the Senate, and cancer center officials hope this aspect would be corrected in any future legislation, such as in the context of immigration reform. Now, the research released today documents a previously unknown benefit of immigration, namely that immigrants play an important role in helping Americans survive cancer. But the research raises another issue. If it's so difficult even for cancer researchers to obtain green cards, then the need to reform the nation's immigration system is likely more urgent than we thought. Now I am going to turn it over to Laura Lichter, who is the president of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. She's the founder of Lichter Immigration in Denver, Colorado, and is widely published as an author and also as a speaker on immigration law throughout the country. Her practice and years of legal experience touch on all of the immigration reform issues now being discussed in Congress. Laura?
Thanks, Stuart. And I think it's worth putting all of this in context, because the majority of Americans would assume that somebody with an advanced degree, certainly somebody who is practicing and ready to contribute to such an important area such as cancer research, or even just someone who's coming here to be a doctor who might help us serve medically underserved area, you wouldn't think that this would be difficult. But in point of fact, this is an incredibly difficult system that we've built, and it's sort of picked up different barnacles along the way and different little rules here and there. And I think Stuart's comment about how the most recent effort at a STEM bill would have, in fact, actually excluded these people from the program really illustrates how I think our efforts to craft solid, good program for immigration law really just sort of falls prey to the political process at the last minute. And the results that we end up with are less than what they could be or should be. It's worth noting that many of the people who are important in these fields don't start out as Nobel Prize winners. They like other people, have to walk before they run. And in the immigration context, that might mean that they need access to a student visa or an exchange visa to come here and complete their studies to gain that additional knowledge and additional training. They need then to switch to another type of temporary visa for most cases, the H-1B visa, which has been under quite a bit of attack. It's not an easy visa to come by. There are limitations on the numbers of visas that are available throughout the year. Even though some researchers are exempt from some of those caps, it's worth putting this in, again, putting it in context that not every person is just the researcher at an institute. There are always other folks that are involved in the process that, you know, we need to make sure that there is an immigration option available for them as well. But that H-1B visa is something that is really one of the more cumbersome pieces of our immigration puzzle at this point. We do have visas for outstanding individuals, but again, this is a very limited number of people. And what we've seen, and is what is very well illustrated in Stuart's report, is that a lot of our most phenomenal researchers, the people who have achieved the most breakthroughs in this process, really are homegrown. And they come up through the system, whether they entered legally and became an H-1B worker after being a student and went through the process of being sponsored for permanent residence, or even some people who entered the country as undocumented farm workers, as we're going to hear later. But I think it's worth just remembering that if it's this hard for someone who is actually a brain surgeon or a cancer researcher to come in, how hard is it for, you know, somebody who's just a normal contributor? Stuart mentioned also the long delays in people being able to get a green card. And these are even people who have followed the rules at every step of the way, working for name brand institutions, doing everything absolutely 100% right. For people at the researcher level, they might be looking at a wait, depending on where they're from, of over a decade before they can even start the application process for residency. The quickest this might be, and I use quick in quotes, might be a half a dozen years. And that needs to change, because we're losing valuable intellectual capital, because other countries would quite quite happily pounce on people that are well-published and poised to contribute to research in these important areas. But that, in a nutshell, is probably, I think, the best illustration of why the system that we have really doesn't work. If it doesn't work for somebody who's likely to be able to save many people's lives, how is it supposed to work for the entire problem that we have?
Great. Thank you very much, Laura. And I'm trying to see if Dr. Q, are you on the call at Yazoviet? He's not. He is with a patient, and so in the meantime, I'm going to ask Laura a quick question. And Laura, looking at immigration reform, to ask in the most broadest sense, what do you think are some of the key issues that have already been developing, and you know, how does it relate to some of what we're talked about here today so far?
Sure. I think what we're really seeing developing here is an understanding that you cannot focus on simply one aspect of the problem. For example, if you focus entirely on enforcement and border security, that's not going to fix the problem. If you focus only on how to bring people into the country in a system that makes more sense than our current family-based backlog and our very cumbersome employment-based system, but ignore what to do, for example, with the undocumented population, that doesn't work. It really is the proverbial three-legged stool, and unless reform looks at balancing all of these issues, I don't think we're going to have anything more workable than what we have. Frankly, anybody that practices in this area will tell you there's a whole lot of kind of no-brainer stuff going on here. We have a mess, and it is exactly the mess that you would expect to have if you wrote the law that we have on the books. There's nothing surprising about it. There's nothing that couldn't have been anticipated. But what we have is the result of a very messy system where immigration has been more at the mercy of politics than just common sense thinking. And we have a historic opportunity to get it right and fix the problem that's plagued us for 20 or 30 years at this point in time. I believe that there has to be a path to citizenship for the undocumented who are here. Without that, frankly, any attempt to reform will fail because these people aren't going away. They're part of our community. They're part of our businesses. They're part of our daily life. The economic hit of failing to address this issue or hoping they would all go away it would be devastating. And frankly, when you talk to any economist of any place on the political spectrum, they would be hard-pressed to say anything other than immigration reform is not only necessary but critical to our economic recovery. Tying immigration reform to border security, I believe in some ways really is a red herring. We have very effective border security at this point. It has been beefed up quite a bit over the last decade and especially over the last 4 years. Our enforcement has been wrapped up also over the last 4 years. And it would be logically very awkward, we'll put it that way, to try to tie the security issue, the border security issue, and make that a condition precedent for immigration reform. You can't fix the immigration problem simply by enforcing an existing law that doesn't work harder. You're just going to keep banging your head against the wall. But the issue of future flow, and I think this is really what Stewart's report brings up, needs to be something that is handled intelligently, with common sense and with an eye towards who benefits our system most and what our values are. And that means making sure that we have an intelligent way to promote the immigration of individuals who will contribute to our society, to maintain our core values of family unity and being a free place and a safe place in the world for people fleeing persecution. I think the good news is that all of those aims are achievable. I think what is distressing is that we've turned it over to a political body, and it will be it'll be a heck of a ride. This will be a very interesting several months, and I have great hopes that our common sense and our common ground will win out over partisan politics.
Laura, one final thing, and then we're going to open up to questions. And while we're waiting to see if Dr. Q is able to get off with his patient, the in your practice, what are some of the things that you see in your practice which point for the need for immigration reform, either in this area, particularly to the study, or just more generally?
I think one of the things is to start off with what is probably the most common misapprehension of the American public, that immigration, that we have a workable immigration option in place, and that people, for whatever reason, choose not to use it, that there already is a legal way to do this, and that it makes sense, and that people who are not successful or are working sort of outside the system somehow have just made the choice to avoid the rules. And what your report has pointed out, Stuart, is that even people who are at the utmost level of I think what we'd probably everyone would agree the best and easiest value we could see to the American public, cancer research. I mean, goodness, that's about as good as it gets. That even people in that position, for them, following the rules is this very arcane and Byzantine path that it's never straight. Sometimes you can never get from point A to point B, or if you're going to go there, you might take an 8-year detour into something. And so I think the first miscomprehension really is that we have a workable system that somehow businesses or families or individuals just aren't using. A business can't just find a worker and sponsor them. It's not like going down to the pound and finding out a puppy. It is a heck of a lot more complicated, and you can't just sponsor someone. We have all sorts of, roadblocks that are put in the way, ironically, of the very people that have a path to residency, the people that have connections to U.S. businesses, that are valued employees, people who would contribute to our society, to research, to greater achievements in science and technology, putting roadblocks in the path of people who are family members of U.S. citizens or residents. That's how our immigration law has developed. And as I said, this is a historic opportunity to bring some sense to the system and promote those categories that are close to our values and benefit our country in a sane and non-political way.
Great. I don't know if Dr. Q has been able to get on the call yet. We're still waiting for him. And in the meantime, why don't we open up for some questions, and then if he's able to get on, we will then turn back to him.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touchtone phone. You may remove your question from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 keys now. Our first question comes from Thomas Sparrow with the BBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Stuart. Thank you very much for all this. I wanted to ask you a question regarding the Hispanic researchers in the U.S. I found interesting from what you just mentioned that most of the immigrant researchers come from countries like India or China or Germany or Canada or the UK.
Mm-hmm.
But despite being a very important part of the population in the United States, Hispanics rarely appear in that list that you mentioned. Why do you think there are so few Hispanic cancer researchers in the United States?
Well, I think it's a matter of a lot of the Hispanic population is younger, and so I think we will see that those numbers increase as things move along. I think that many of the first generation of immigrants, say from Mexico or Central America, maybe did not have the highest education, And, you know, and this is similar to what we saw in earlier waves of immigration in the United States, you know, closer to the turn of the century, the first immigrants that came in, you know, from Italy or other countries were not college graduates or graduate degree holders. So I think that we will see that as it goes forward. And so I think in the second generation, we'll start to see more of that. I think part of it also with China and India, there is, you know, we were talking about very large countries with a very large, technical base, and we've seen enormous increases in the higher education aspirations in those countries. I think I saw a poll that the parents in China are starting to consider it almost a minimum that their child gets a graduate degree. So I think that I think you will see the increase in Hispanic researchers and doctors as things move along.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll just jump in there, Stuart. I think there are also some practical considerations. It's very difficult to get into the United States on a student visa, and you will tend to see that we discriminate might be too harsh of a term, but it is fairly difficult to get into the United States on a student visa if the perception is that you're not going to simply study and go home. And I think that one of the things that we may see, and I would have a lot of optimism about, is with the children, the immigrants that arrive here as children under the deferred action policy that was announced last June. These children have grown up in American schools and until very recently faced really sort of a personal cliff. After graduating from high school, they wouldn't have necessarily had the ability to go to school to continue their education through college at the university level. So I actually think that we're going to see some very interesting changes in these demographics. And I think that people that come here that may not have had the academic background, perhaps because they didn't have the opportunity to come here on a student visa, may find that their path forward is through business. And so they are our entrepreneur class, because you don't need a degree, you just need guts.
Okay. And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll pause for just a moment to allow questions to enter the queue. Again, that is star and one if you would like to ask a question. And it looks like we have another question from Basilisa Alonso with Hispanic Link News Service. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. I'm here with Jose de la Isla. He's also a reporter with Hispanic Link News Service.
Mm-hmm. I'm asking primarily concerned about the report that Senator Bernie Sanders released recently about primary caregivers what the tie-in is to immigration. Of course, in the more specialized professions, cancer research is very important. But can somebody describe to me, other than realizing the hardship in qualifying, what's the relationship between the health professions and the immigration policy, and what are you prescribing?
That's a really good question. We actually did a study, and this is, in some way, the cancer research is almost a follow-on to an earlier study we did in November on the whole issue, and it's on our website as well at NFAP, www.nfap.com. The process for physicians is a very arduous process. If you're educated, if you went to like an international medical school, for example, if you were educated abroad, I know, Laura, if you want to discuss some of the details on how that works and how it makes it harder to fill these primary care needs.
Yeah, I let me just sort of try to address some of the other things as well in your question. You raise a very important point, which is our healthcare system is not just top cancer researchers. It is the individual doctors, it's the nurse practitioners, it is the nurse assistants, it's you know, even all the way down to the CNA level. And when we look at how our current immigration laws work, there is little, if any, option at the low end, someone who's a CNA or an LPN, to be able to obtain a visa to work in the United States. Generally, it's going to be RN level or higher. We do make physicians jump through a number of hoops, some of which are, you know, fairly important because we want to make sure that we actually have, you know, folks practicing here that are qualified and practicing at the level that we demand from our physicians. But much of it is about proving that you're going someplace that there's, you know, no other doctors available, showing you're going to a medically underserved area, et cetera. It's actually quite a specialized practice as far as immigration law is concerned. But your question actually brings out, like I said, I think one of the most important points about this is that by kind of cherry-picking researchers or doctors and making a path for those professions, we may lose sight of the fact that those professions cannot exist and we cannot have orderly health care and we cannot have good patient service and good patient care without all of the other attendant positions, even down to food service. So this is a much bigger question. People that are concerned about the proposal to have you know, STEM graduates particularly singled out, you know, sort of got a taste of their own medicine, as it were, when cancer researchers were left out. And I think this is, again, illustrative that we have to be more inclusive and that any system going forward has to be more flexible in terms of recognizing that we are going to have some incredibly significant demands going forward as far as healthcare. And frankly, we already have incredible demand for healthcare workers at the lower ends, the RNs, at the LPN level and the CNA level, not just RNs, PTs, and other you know, allied health professionals. So it is a more complicated question than just how do you bring in a researcher or how can we bring in physicians more easily. It really shows why we need a complete overhaul of the system.
Laura, I believe Dr. Q, are you on the call, I understand?
Yes, I am here. I'm so sorry, guys, that I'm late. I wish I could tell you that I was drinking a cafe latte or something like that, but we were dealing with life and death situation with our patients. So I'm here, to answer any questions.
Sure. Let me give you a brief introduction and then allow you to speak however long you want about, you know, about the topic and you know, the paper and your own thoughts on the issue. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Alfredo Quiñones Hinojosa, who is a professor of neurosurgery, oncology, neuroscience, and cellular and molecular medicine at Johns Hopkins University. He's the director of the brain tumor surgery program at Johns Hopkins Bayview Hospital, as well as director of the pituitary surgery program at Johns Hopkins, and leads the Brain Tumor Stem Cell Laboratory. I encourage everyone to read his autobiography, Becoming Dr. Q. It is an amazing story, and it's an amazing story of achieving the American dream. He first entered the country from Mexico as an undocumented teen working in the fields. He later obtained legal status and went from studying in a community college, knowing relatively little English, to graduating from Harvard Medical School and becoming one of the nation's leading neurosurgeons. He performs over 250 brain surgeries a year, often removing life-threatening tumors, and his work in brain cancer is funded by the National Institutes of Health. Now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Q.
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Stuart. I really appreciate it. You know, when you went through all my titles, all it means that the more titles you have, the least important you are, you know. And number two, you're talking about how I knew no English when I came in. I continued to challenge myself and continue to learn this beautiful language, obviously, and for that I'm very grateful. But you're absolutely right. I think that I've been very blessed in my life that opportunities were open in the mid to late 80s when Ronald Reagan was in, the president of the United States through the immigration reform of California. This was a subsequent to the actual amnesty in the mid-80s. And that was specifically designed for migrant farm workers. So I was able to get my foot, so to speak, in the door, go to community college, learn English. By 1991, I was at UC Berkeley, graduated with honors in 94, went on to Harvard. By 99, I gave the commencement speech, went on to do my residency in brain surgery, and then I specialized on brain cancer. They did a postdoctoral fellowship. And what I was impressed from early on is in all these laboratories that I spent time at Harvard, at UC Berkeley first, then Harvard, and then San Francisco, and now my own laboratory, is how many people who were working in cancer were from immigrant backgrounds. So they were coming from other parts of the world. And today I was actually sitting in my clinic with one of my postdocs. Her name is Sara Abadi. She is a postdoctoral fellow originally from Italy. And I asked her the simple question, how many people out of all the full-time people in my lab are from the United States? And we came up with 3 out of about 15 people, and even less when you look at all the undergraduates. So clearly, you know, there's been an incredible influx of people who are sacrificing a lot, who are doing a lot of this very hard work and trying to, you know, help us find cures for brain cancer or any cancer, who come from immigrant backgrounds. And I think that your papers, Stuart, obviously, you know, beautifully illustrate, you know, what happens at these big institutions and how many of these people are doing, you know, a lot of this very, very difficult work. And I think that that's, you know, sort of my experience and what I see in my team. And it's very simple. And I want to point out, for instance, right now I have a postdoctoral fellow that is back in China trying to fix her visa situation. And we put on hold a project that she has that can potentially help us find a better way to treat brain cancer. We have a project in my lab where we use fat to fight brain cancer, literally fat. Mesenchymal stem cells that we get from fat, and she's the leader of that project, and she's now putting that project back for at least a month. At the end, it'll be about 2 months, and the time that we wasted, the time that we have spent in her going back to China to try to get her visa sorted out, that's going to put us back a year behind for me to move this project into a clinical trial and a disease for which we have an incredible unmet need. And that goes on for every single one of my postdocs. It's constantly interruptions. They got to go back. They got to fix their visas. You know, there's a lot of big struggles, especially when my postdocs are coming from China and India and stuff like that. So I see this as a big problem in our research and something that I'm hoping that one way or another, one day we're going to find better solutions.
Great. Well, why don't we open it back up for questions and see who would have additional questions.
And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. Our first question comes from Thomas Sparrow with BBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Dr. Quiñones Hinojosa, nice to meet you. I wanted to ask you a similar question to the one I asked Stuart before you arrived. And that question is about your relationship with other Hispanic cancer researchers. Could you tell me perhaps a bit about that relationship and, in particular, why you think there are only a few cancer researchers from Latin America if you compare them with other nationalities?
That's a wonderful, wonderful question, Thomas. I wish I had an easy answer. I think that my overall impression, when you look even at my webpage and my laboratory, maybe about one-third of my investigators come from Latin America or from Mexico, Central, South America, obviously. And I would say that my laboratory is the exception rather than the rule. When I look around campus, obviously the numbers, if you look at Hopkins alone, I'm not going to go beyond Hopkins. We employed over 35,000 people, and about 1.03% of them are of Hispanic or Latino heritage. Alrighty, and we're talking about a state where we have the largest growth of Hispanics in the United States right now, and an incredible accelerated number. So I would say that my relationship with the Hispanic community has been very strong. I've been committed. I continue to be committed. Tomorrow, I'm going to be traveling to Yale to speak to the Hispanic students at Yale University. And every month, I do one or two events where I get to, you know, to sort of encourage our youth, not just from Hispanic backgrounds, from all backgrounds, to pursue careers in science and especially in the neuroscience, which is what I do. But I think that we have an unmet need. I think that that goes back to the fact that we have one of the lowest levels of education in the United States. The achievement of our youth is really, underscores a problem that we have in our country. So it doesn't matter what our commitment is. You know, at the end of the day, we really do have an unmet need. And it's something that is dear to me because I don't think that we're going to be able to find cures for this disease, especially here in the United States, if we don't educate our youth. And by the year 2050, one out of four people in the United States will be of Hispanic, heritage. And I think that what Stuart is doing by demonstrating there are people that are coming from other countries that are potentially considered humble countries, that they have contributions to science, that's one way of encouraging our youth and our population to work together towards educating our masses.
Thank you.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one keys now. Our next question comes from Fawn Johnson with National Journal. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. You, Dr. Koo, you talked a little bit about this, I think, just in the last question, but I was interested in your statement that you have all these problems, these immigration-related problems with your postdocs. Can you tell me how many of your postdocs are immigrants and how many are Americans, and do you detect any differences in, what's going on there?
That's a wonderful question, Fawn, because I knew you were going to ask me this question. So like I said, I was with my with one of my postdocs, with Dr. Abadi, right before, and we estimated, as we just going back and forth, she and I, you know, going over these numbers, I was in clinic seeing patients and all this kind of stuff, we estimated that out of all my students in the lab, both graduate and postdoctoral fellows, which amounts to about 14 right now, only three are American. The rest of them are all immigrants from different parts of the world. All righty? So as you can see, it's and I would say that the other laboratories at Hopkins, you know, and cancer, I think Stuart has the numbers, but at least the laboratories that I know, they reflect a similar trend of having a lot of people from other parts of the world who come in and they work, you know, they have this immigrant mentality, Fawn, that, you know, they work 14, 18 hours a day, whatever it takes to succeed because they believe in the American dream. They believe that, you know, the way that they are going to make, you know, research advance is through hard work, dedication, determination, that resilience. They continue to be excited. They continue to admire the people around them. And at the end, they mentor each other. We all mentor each other. So they have this sort of natural ability to work, you know, and to try to find cures for brain cancer and to continue to feel the American dream. But they continue to struggle, like I said. I mean, I go back to this idea that every single one of them, they have issues with their visas and they have to go back to their countries. And that puts a major impediment or pushes our research progress backwards.
Well, can you tell me, I mean, it's an interesting the way that you describe them. This is a very typical description of an immigrant. Do you see differences with your American students? I mean, is that something that kind of work? What's going on there? I mean,
well, that's a great point because I would say that at the end of the day, they all feed on each other's energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's not a secret. I mean, if you look in my lab, there was a report in Nature, about 2 years ago, the 24/7 laboratory, that Nature came in and did a report in my lab because we work really hard. We really do believe that that's what our patients deserve, to find a cure for brain cancer. So there's a sort of, in some ways, I think that maybe I also select people like just like myself. As Stuart said, I came into this country as an immigrant. I still feel that I have that immigrant mentality of working as hard as I can to possibly find a cure for brain cancer. So I may be selecting people just like me. They believe in the same American dream, and they all feed on each other, and my lab does work really hard. And I think that both American and non-American, they come together, and they sort of, you know, feed on each other's energy, and they keep moving our work forward.
Thanks.
And it appears we have no further questions at this time.
Dr. Koo, if I could ask one question. I mean, based on your experience, I mean, how much benefit would it be to cancer research if we were able to solve some of these immigration issues where your postdocs and other people who you come in contact with are able to, if they want to stay here permanently, could get green cards in a relatively quick time, and you know, at a quick time, and be able to get settled down and then be able to move on and be focused solely on their research issue, not questions about whether they're even going to be able to stay in the United States?
Oh, wonderful question. What a lovely question, because it really hits me right on the heart, because I would say that my postdocs struggle with this. I mean, when I ask them this question, they immediately, their face just glows in potential happiness. If they had a way to get around a lot of these laws, if they had a way to get their green cards and to have to only worry about doing their work and finding a cure for brain cancer, I think that it would make an immense difference on them. And that's judging on my group alone. Like I said, I can't comment on the rest of the United States and the rest of people doing cancer research, but I would imagine that they feel the same way, because at the end of the day, they're in constant struggle and constant fear as to whether or not their visas are going to have a delay. They have to spend money to go back to their countries to renew their visas. They spend time, you know, like I said, 2 months behind on the schedule, translates into a year or two of being able to translate some of this work into a clinical trial. I mean, it's got a downfall, you know, sort of a snowball effect, you know, down the road. And I think that that's really one of the greatest things, that we can make a difference. I think that it would be difficult to quantify, but it would have an immense difference on our scientists.
Great, thank you. If there are no other questions, I want to thank everyone for participating in the call. And again, the study is on our website at www.nfap.com. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Sorry for being late.